Case number 11-5320, American Civil Liberties Union et al. Appellants versus Central Intelligence Agency. Mr. Jaffer for appellants, Mr. Delery for appellee.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Jamil Jaffer for the ACLU. The question presented here is whether the CIA can refuse to acknowledge in court a program that senior officials have spoken about repeatedly on the record. The President and the CIA Director, the then CIA Director, have spoken repeatedly about the targeted killing program, the drone program. They've claimed to the public that the program is...
The key here is it has to be linked to the CIA, right? It's the CIA that's in front of us, correct?
I don't think that's exactly right, Your Honor. But
we have case law that says one agency can't make an official acknowledgement for another, can they?
Well, that's true, Your Honor, but two things about that case law. The first is that case law, it doesn't address the kind of situation we have here, where the person who's making the disclosure is still a member of the cabinet at the time that he makes the disclosure. So
you're
CIA
referring to Secretary talking as Secretary of Defense about things he did at CIA.
That's right.
Is there any case law on that? I mean, there's lots of case law that to say that later disclosure by former officials cannot be official acknowledgement, right? Why doesn't that fit this case?
Well, most of those cases involve lower-level employees who are not in government service anymore at the time that they made those statements. So they don't control this case.
But is there anything in the discussion of those cases that suggests that the subsequent job may affect the analysis?
No, but there wouldn't be, Your Honor, because the subsequent job in those cases was a job outside the government. We weren't talking about somebody who was still a member of the cabinet, still fighting the same war, still working for the same president. This is a different situation, but I don't want to get caught up in that because ultimately we are not arguing, and you don't need to hold, in order to rule in our favor, you don't need to hold that Mr. Panetta's statements as Secretary of Defense are sufficient in themselves to constitute an official acknowledgement. All we're asking you to do is look to those statements to resolve any ambiguity in the statements that he made as CIA director.
But you do argue that these statements, some of these statements alone are sufficient, don't you?
That's right. Now, we make that argument with respect to the statements he made as CIA director.
So, and just to pursue Judge Griffith's question a little differently, your FOIA request is aimed at the CIA, correct? That's what you're asking for.
That's right. I mean,
information about the CIA's drone program, correct?
That's right.
So isn't that why these statements need, if for you to succeed here, since you have to show a strict match between what you're seeking and what's been disclosed under our case law?
That's also right.
You have to show not just that there's a disclosure of a government drone program, but that there's a CIA drone program, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so which of these four statements that Mr. Panetta made do you think is your best case?
I think that the best case is the statement that Mr. Panetta made to the Pacific Council, which was May of 2009. That's on page 114 of the Joint Appendix. At that particular event, Mr. Panetta was asked specifically about the drone program. He responds not just explaining or stating that the drone program is effective, but he distinguishes the drone program from other forms of military.
But was he asked about the CIA drone program?
Well, he was introduced at that event as the CIA director. The whole talk was about the CIA. The page before that question is entirely about the duties of the CIA in particular. And he returns to that topic after that question. So I don't think that it's plausible to read that statement as anything other than a response about the CIA's program specifically.
He was asked about the president's strategy, right? He was asked about the president. That was the question, the president's strategy.
Well, it's true that that phrase is used in the question.
And he didn't say anything. I'm just looking at his answer here. He didn't say anything in his answer to suggest that specifically that this was a CIA program.
Well,
sure, he's CIA director, but that wasn't the question he was asked.
Well, at the time he answered the question, he was the CIA director. He hadn't yet served as Secretary of Defense. He had spoken entirely about the CIA to that point, and he returned to the topic of the CIA after that point. Yeah. So I don't think, and if you look at the news reports about that particular event, everybody read the statement in the same way. But I think that if there's any ambiguity about that statement, and I don't concede that there is, but if there is any ambiguity, it's resolved by the other statements that Mr. Panetta made as CIA director. For example, his statements to the Washington Post on March 17th and his statements to the Wall Street Journal on March 18th. He makes clear there that the CIA, I think he calls it the most aggressive operation that the CIA has been involved in. He's talking about the same operation that he was talking about at the Pacific Council. And he speaks about the killing of particular individuals. So I think that you should look at those statements collectively,
My question. My question was whether any of these individually get you where you want. I would have thought your answer to my question was the ABC interview, where he does mention the CIA.
Right. I mean, I think
but there he doesn't mention drones.
Right. I don't think I think that the first interview is in itself enough. But I don't think you have to look at these in a vacuum. In fact, I think it would be a mistake to look at each one in isolation. If the CIA says on Monday that the agency is based in Langley and on Tuesday that it has 10,000 employees, nobody would say that there was any doubt that the CIA was based in Langley and had 10,000 employees. And I think the same thing is going on here. We think that the statement to the Pacific Council discloses that the CIA has a drone program that's engaged in targeted killing, that it's used for targeted killing. But even if you don't accept that all those factors are disclosed in that particular answer, they're disclosed by the other statements. But those are all statements. We started by talking about statements that...
You mean other than the four Panetta statements?
No, I mean you should look at the four statements collectively, and those statements are statements that Mr. Panetta made as CIA director. And so you don't have to reach the question that Judge Griffith was asking about. But if you find...
If they don't... I'm having trouble understanding the collective argument. I mean, if they don't... I know... I understand the argument, but if none of them individually make the point that is amount to the official disclosure, how can the group of them do that?
Well, I mean, I think you could ask the same question about a single. Imagine it were a single interview, and in the first paragraph, Mr. Panetta disclosed A, and in the second paragraph, he disclosed B. You know, we wouldn't. I don't think we'd be having this conversation about.
That isn't this case.
Well, I think it's similar to this case in that if you think that there is ambiguity in the Pacific Council statement about whether Mr. Panetta was talking about the CIA, that ambiguity is resolved by the other statements he's made since.
Suppose we read all these and, you know, we understand your argument and we just can't tell. It's just too close a call. Don't you then lose because of the burden of proof? You do have the burden, correct? On this aspect of it, that is demonstrating a waiver, you have the burden of proof.
Well, Your Honor, can I just answer one other question before I answer that one? Because so I just want to be clear about what we mean when we're talking about these statements, because they're really, in my mind, three different categories of statements here. They're the statements that Mr. Panetta made as CIA director, which we think are sufficient in themselves, at least collectively, the four statements collectively, to establish official acknowledgement. To the extent there's ambiguity about those statements. And again, we don't concede there is. But to the extent there is ambiguity, we think you can look to the statements that Mr. Panetta made as Secretary of Defense to resolve that ambiguity. And again, this is not a situation where we're not asking you to overrule the cases in which the court has said, obviously, in which the court has said that statements of former officials aren't sufficient to establish official acknowledgement on the part of their previous employers. We're not asking you to reconsider those cases. We're just saying that those cases are situations in which the plaintiff was relying on those statements, was arguing that those statements themselves were official acknowledgements. And here, all we're arguing is that those statements resolve ambiguity in the statements that Mr. Panetta made as CIA director. But to answer now the question, Judge Tatel, you asked, it is generally the plaintiff's burden to establish official acknowledgement. The one thing here, one of the things that distinguishes this case from all of the others is this pattern of what appears to be strategic, selective disclosures on the part of...
So you just said what it appears to be, and isn't that the problem? You can't say definitively that it is, right? The strongest part of your argument, it seems to me, is there seems to be this pattern of strategic and selective leaks at very high levels of the government. But your problem is you're getting that all from media accounts, and we don't have any case law that helps you there, right? I mean, to the extent that we've dealt with this before, we've suggested that media sources, media reporting of anonymous leaks can't be a basis for official acknowledgement. How do you get around that?
So, but those cases, just like the cases about officials who are no longer with the agency that they, you know, purport to be acknowledging for, those cases involve plaintiffs who pointed to media statements as the basis of the official acknowledgement. And we are not saying that the media statements here are the official acknowledgement. We're saying that Mr. Panetta's statements as CIA director are the official acknowledgement. To the extent there's ambiguity, you can resolve ambiguity by looking at the other statements. But one other thing about the media statements.
And that would be new law, right? But you would say this is a new fact pattern, right?
It's a new fact pattern, and it would be new law to hold for the government, too, because the government would be asking you for the first time to hold a pattern of this kind, again, what appears to be a pattern of deliberate selective disclosure.
We'll ask them about that. My guess is they're going to dispute that, but we'll ask them about that.
Okay, good.
I have a series of questions which will reflect my confusion about your litigation strategy. Sorry. Seems to me you have a much stronger argument here than what we've just heard, and I want to know whether you've waived all of your strongest arguments for a strategic reason I do not understand, or whether I just don't understand your argument. Okay. So you started out by saying your requests are about the CIA's drone program. Now, I've read your FOIA requests, and that's not what it's about. It's about documents that they have about drones. Some of them are about the CIA's drones programs, but a lot of them could be, if they have other documents about the lawfulness of using drones without specific reference to whether they are CIA's drones or DOD's drones. They talk about assessment of the effects of the explosions. CIA might be making those assessments whether or not they or the DOD is seeking, owns the program.
Right, Judge Garland, you're absolutely right, and I didn't mean to. I'm actually using drone program in the way that we use it in the brief, and there was at the beginning, I think, of our reply brief, the government had argued or had questioned in its brief whether we were waiving all of that other stuff. And at the beginning of our reply, I think we made clear we're not.
Okay, so then I'm just going to take a few minutes because I want to get through all of what I think are your best arguments, and I want to make sure you haven't lost every single one of them. Okay, so on this first one, to take the Pacific Council director, the statement of the Pacific Council, it seems to me you're not stating what appears to be the best argument. I want to know whether I'm imagining it. So the question is, you mentioned that you believe the strategy in Pakistan is working, the president's strategy in Pakistan and the tribal regions, which is the remote drone strikes. Panetta's answer while he was CIA director is, obviously because these are covert and secret, I cannot go into the particulars. I think it does suffice to say that these operations have been very effective because they have been very precise in terms of the targeting and involves a minimum of collateral damage. Now, that seems to me to create at least an inference that there is some document that he has read which shows a minimum of collateral damage, unless the CIA director operates completely on words, which I think is very unlikely. So that would suggest there is a document in the CIA's file, or many documents, about the scope of collateral damage, whether it's the CIA's drone or the DOD's drone or anyone else's drone. Now, are you abandoning that argument?
No, of course not, Your Honor. And I should have highlighted that argument when I began. I agree with you that a lot of the statements in which the government argues with some justification that, or in some cases entirely justified, that Secretary Panetta doesn't mention the CIA. He does mention the drone program, and it's quite clear from his discussion of the use of drones that the CIA has an interest of some kind in drones, and at the very least has records relating to the drone.
So your question, you're searching here not only for documents about the CIA's own drone program, but you want them to acknowledge that they have, well, put it another way, they have said we are not going to acknowledge one way or the other whether we have documents that say anything at all about drones. And that is what you're challenging, is that right?
That's right. So, Your Honor, the FOIA request we filed is much broader than the CIA's use of drones as the CIA to carry out targeted killings. We have not abandoned any aspect of the FOIA request except there are two paragraphs.
One's about foreign.
That's right.
All right.
The rest is still active.
All right. Now let me ask you about some more specific arguments, and it may be that you have abandoned these and intentionally so, and I'm not sure. So the centerpiece of the government's position below is this Cole declaration, right, who's an information officer for the CIA. And she says they can't acknowledge whether it has documents because, quote, it would indicate that the CIA was involved in drone strikes or at least had an intelligence interest in drone strikes. And to me, that suggests three possible arguments. One argument would be, why would acknowledging that the agency has documents indicate that it was involved itself in the drone strike? Now, have you abandoned a challenge of that nature, that is, a challenge to the logic of her statement that merely conceding you have documents means they're actually your drones?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. The only thing that we have we have waived for the purpose of the appeal relates to the propriety of the exemption 1 and 3.
Well, that's what I'm confused about, what that means. So let me go through three arguments. You tell me if any of these are within the scope of your waiver. The next question I would have from Cole's declaration is, what is the harm of since DOD and the president have acknowledged that there is a drone program, what is the national security injury from acknowledging that the CIA is part of that program? I'm not asking whether there's an answer to that question. I'm asking you whether, for purposes of this appeal, and therefore forever, have you waived the argument that the government, that it's not logical, legal, et cetera, to argue that there is a national security harm from disclosing the CIA's involvement as compared to DOD's involvement?
Right. I don't think we've waived that, Your Honor, but I confess I haven't thought about that question directly. If you'll...
Well, that seems to me, I mean, if you want this, you want to know about whether the CIA is involved, and the president has already acknowledged that the rest of the government's involved.
Well,
like your main argument would be, well, what's the harm? How can you claim a harm from that?
Your Honor, part of the reason, you know, we haven't spent a lot of time thinking about that is because we think it's plain that the CIA's involvement has been disclosed. And so, you know, the question the question you're asking is a question we never get to because it's so
we
obvious.
We only never get to if we agree with you.
No, I know.
We
I
disagree
understand.
With you.
I understand. But
that's the next question, and are you waiving it?
I don't think so, Your Honor, but I would like to convince you to agree with us on the prior question. If you look at the statements that the CIA director, that Mr. Panetta made as Secretary of Defense, they are so clearly One of his statements, the one he made in Naples, is about the Predator drones specifically. He uses the phrase Predator drones, and he makes clear it was the CIA that has the Predator drones. And again, this would be a harder case if we were arguing that that in itself was an acknowledgement. But we're not arguing that. We're just arguing that you should feel free and you ought to look to the statements that Mr. Panetta made.
I got it, but you're avoiding my question. So my third question on whether you've lost something here, waived something here, is that they say there's a harm in acknowledging that we even have an intelligence interest. And have you waived the challenge to how it could be a harm for the Central Intelligence Agency to acknowledge that it has an intelligence interest in drones?
Again, Your Honor, I don't think we have waived it, but on our theory, you don't need to reach that question. Mm-hmm. You don't need to reach the question because they have acknowledged it. They've acknowledged it in Mr. Panetta's statements at the Pacific Council. Mr. Panetta talked about the CIA's activities in Pakistan, specifically in the interviews with the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and ABC. Those were all statements that he made as CIA director. To the extent there's ambiguity there, you can look to the statements he made as Secretary of Defense. And to the extent there's still ambiguity at the end of that, then there's this question that Judge Griffith asked earlier about what to do with the media reports. And there, it's true, we can't establish to a certainty that the government is deliberately leaking this information to the press.
While if I were you, I'd try to focus on the official acknowledgments. Not only would be a new law, but it would be new law if we were going to rely on these leaks.
Well,
if you have an argument here, you have to establish them by some official acknowledgement, even if we use the word official more broadly than it's used before. But there's no way we can use the word official for a leak unless you
I'm not asking you to, Your Honor. The only thing I'm asking you to do with the media reports is to the extent you can't resolve the case on the basis of the other statements that are actually attributed to senior officials on the record, to the extent you can't resolve it, we would just ask you to do either of two things with the media statements. Either remand and ask the government to file a declaration disowning those statements, and it's actually gone some way towards doing that in the Cole declaration, although Ms. Cole is probably not in a position to know whether people like then CIA Director Panetta intentionally leaked this information or intentionally disclosed the information to the press. So we'd ask you just to demand that the government, require the government to file a declaration disowning the statements, or...
Has anyone ever done, any court ever done something like that?
No, but the fact situation here is worlds apart from any other case that the court has ever been presented with. Every single Glomar case the government relies on
is a
case...
There are lots of other cases with leaks. I mean, if we were going to order the government to disown every leak, We would be here all day.
I think that there is a lot of space between cases involving leaks and this case. This is not just an isolated leak. This is a pattern of dozens of leaks over a long period of time from people who plainly are on the inside.
I remain perplexed by this argument. You have the President of the United States announcing we have a drone program. If I were you, I would start with that. I would not start with unauthorized, anonymous leaks about a drone program, some of which talk about the CIA and some of which not.
I don't understand
the nature of the strategy.
I agree with you, and I'm not suggesting that you have to rely on the leaks at all. I'm arguing that Secretary Panetta's statements and the President's statements are sufficient in themselves to constitute public acknowledgments of the CIA's involvement in the drone program. I'm just saying that...
Pause again over those words, the CIA's involvement. I thought you wanted to know whether they had documents about drones, regardless of whether the CIA owned the program or not.
That's right, Your Honor. I'm just saying that they acknowledge even more than that,
Am I right in remembering that throughout your brief you used the phrase the CIA drone program repeatedly?
We do, but we use it as a shorthand, and I think that to the extent there was confusion about that, we tried to resolve it at the beginning of the reply brief when the government had asked us what we meant by that, and we tried to explain. We haven't abandoned any aspect of our FOIA request except for the two specific paragraphs that we identify in the reply.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Stuart Delery for the Appellee CIA. This court, in several cases, has identified two important interests that the strict test for official confirmation serves. It protects the government's vital interest in information related to national security and foreign affairs, and it advances FOIA's interest in disclosure by not punishing officials for attempting to educate the public on matters of public concern, because otherwise officials would be reluctant to speak on important national security matters. Here, the government has acknowledged that the United States makes efforts to target specific terrorists as part of its counterterrorism operations, that as part of those operations, or in some cases, those operations involve the use of remotely piloted aircraft or drones, and it's also described a legal framework and standards that apply in this context. In a series of speeches and interviews, including by the President's counterterrorism advisor, John Brennan, but also the Attorney General, the legal advisor to the State Department, the General Counsel of DOD, and as has been referenced in yesterday's or the recent exchange of 28J letters, including a recent interview by the President. But there's been no official acknowledgement, one way or the other, about whether the CIA is involved in these particular operations.
What about Mr. Panetta's ABC interview? I mean, you just said the President has acknowledged the existence of a drone program for killing terrorists, and in the ABC interview, he says, "We are engaged in the most aggressive operation in the history of the CIA in that part of the world. And the result is that we are disrupting their leadership. We've taken down nearly half their leaders. We just took down number three." Now, we know from other disclosures that that was all done with drones, and here you have the secretary, excuse me, the director, directly saying, in the history of the CIA.
I think, Your Honor, the point is that his particular statements did not mention drones one way or the other.
No, but you introduced your whole point by saying that the government has acknowledged the existence of the drone program.
That some counterterrorism operations targeted at particular terrorists involve the use of drones, that's not the same thing as saying that all of them do. And Secretary Panetta, in these 2010 interviews in the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, ABC News, all three of them talk about CIA efforts generally, but not with respect to any particular technique. That has never been officially acknowledged.
How was number three taken down?
I don't believe that then-Director Panetta said one way or the other about how.
But, yeah.
I'm not aware of any official confirmation
so
about
your
the
point
technique
then,
that was
government's,
used.
Your point then is for an official acknowledgement, it needs to all be contained in one single statement. We can't put two or three statements together that are official to find an official acknowledgement. Is that your position?
Yes, Your Honor, because I think it reflects this court's cases, which emphasize that an official acknowledgement must match, so that the information requested must match the information that had been disclosed before. The court has, in discussing the reasons for the strict test, has made clear.
Suppose the director says on Monday, we are the agency that uses the drones in the government's drone program. Okay, that's all he says on Monday. Clearly not enough, right? And on Tuesday, he says that Mr. XX, was killed by a drone. You mean we can't put those two together?
I think, consistent with the court's cases, there should be a very high bar before connecting dots in that way.
Well, wouldn't this connect the dots?
I think that these statements don't connect the dots, Your Honor, because then-Director Panetta talked about particular, the aggressive nature of the operations in that area and some success, but I don't believe that there's a connection that makes clear exactly how these operations
were conducted. I'm interested in the leaks question. Could you address that? What are we to make of these allegations of a serious pattern and strategy of of leaks at the highest levels of the CIA and the government as being a selective disclosure and in fact works as an acknowledgement of a CIA drone program?
I would say several things, Your Honor. First of all, as was indicated earlier, I don't believe there's any basis in the court's prior cases to support the use of unattributed sources.
Are you aware of any case in which we have been confronted with allegations of such widespread and strategic leaking at such a high level? Are you aware of any case that's like this?
There certainly are other cases.
Like this?
That other cases involve widespread alleged leaking. I don't think that this particular allegation necessarily is the same. I also emphasize that it's an allegation. The court, when discussing the part of the official confirmation test that suggests that some evidence of bad faith might lead to a different result, has never looked at this question. Has also made clear that that inquiry goes to whether there's a basis to believe the national security judgment reflected in the declarations has not been met, and has emphasized that speculation isn't enough, that the plaintiff seeking the information in FOIA needs to come forward.
So these are allegations, but the allegations are that senior CIA officials leaked information about a CIA drone program to the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, a number of other major media sources. So the common sense of it is we'd have to be left to believe that all of those outlets are, in fact, misinformed or lying.
Right. Well, I think a few additional points. One is these... As a factual matter, for example, when asked about this allegation directly, the president made a statement back in June saying that that was not the case. And so you're confronted here with unsupported allegations in connection with litigation. You have a record that in declaration from the CIA saying that the information being sought here, whether these documents exist, remains a classified fact. And I don't think there's any support in the court's cases to find that fact pattern sufficient to justify a further inquiry, in effect to turn FOIA litigation into a leak investigation. And the question I would have is, what's the rule that would be articulated about what threshold would trigger that kind of inquiry? And beyond that, how would it proceed? It doesn't seem like a workable result. The court has never conceded.
On the other hand, aren't we to apply FOIA? Aren't we to work to resolve to prevent efforts to get around FOIA through strategic leaks, right?
I think what the court has said is that the purpose of FOIA litigation is to determine whether a particular document should or shouldn't be released, not to identify whether a certain fact is or isn't true. And in fact, it goes to the second interest that I identified at the beginning, that the court has said support the strict application of the official confirmation doctrine, which is, you want to further public discussion of these important matters, obviously through the channels like the speeches. But to the extent that you're parsing individual statements of officials or trying to divine the motivations behind unattributed sources in articles, it would have the result of causing officials to refrain from speaking, when in fact the court has suggested what we want the government to do is to identify what can be disclosed consistent with the interests of national security, disclose up to that line, and then justify what's beyond it. So the kind of attempt to figure out what's behind the unattributed statements in articles, in addition to being an unworkable proposition in this context of litigation, we think would have serious consequences.
Can I ask, the Glomar response that you made here is that we cannot confirm or deny the existence of documents involving drones, right? That's the request, because the request was about drones involving the CIA, the DOD, et cetera. It's a broad request.
That's right.
And that was the statement. Right? That you can't confirm the existence or non-existence of the documents.
Right.
Not you can't confirm the existence or non-existence of the program, but that you can't confirm the existence or non-existence of documents because that's all FOIA asks for is right. Documents.
And
right?
The reason, yes, and the reason is because to do that would itself reveal information that is appropriately classified. That was the basis for the declaration.
But how would mere acknowledgement that you have documents, since the president has said and Brennan has said, we have a drone program, how would acknowledging that the CIA has documents about drones? That's all. We're only at that question right now. We're not at the secondary question of what kind of Vaughan index is provided or anything else. How would that disclose something that would harm the national interest?
Your Honor, that question actually was the motivation for the motion to remand to the district court that we filed after the evaluation of the court's of the government's position in a somewhat related matter in the Southern District.
So that's what I'm a little unclear about. So are you prepared today to acknowledge that besides the two speeches that were mentioned in the Southern District of New York, very unclear in your statement of whether that's all you're acknowledging. You acknowledge that the CIA has documents about drones in its files.
Right. Yes, and I believe what the declaration in the New York case said was that that could be acknowledged consistent with national security. The speeches were identified as examples explanations for why just acknowledging the existence of documents would not harm national security.
But you're not suggesting those are the only documents that you have in the files?
Not necessarily. I mean, we were not saying that it was not limited to the two. Huh? We were not saying it was only the two speeches.
Are you willing to acknowledge there are other documents in the file or not? If not, then we should continue the conversation. If so, maybe that's the end of the conversation. You've given up your Glomar response, and now the question is, what is the scope of the Vaughan Index? Now, appreciate the Seventh Circuit doesn't like the no names, no list argument, but of course they use that as a way to support a Glomar response. But here you appear to be giving up your Glomar response. Is that correct?
Yes, as we did in the Southern District case. What we said there was, it can be acknowledged that the CIA has documents. However, the number, nature, and extent of them can't be disclosed.
Well, that hasn't even been addressed here yet.
And that has not been addressed in this case. Again, that was the reason for the motion to remand that we filed.
Can I take you through the four statements that I'm concerned about?
Yes, Your Honor.
None of which involve rumors. Maybe this will turn out to be more important on remand than it is here. I've made up my mind about that. So the first of the important ones is the Pacific Council statement, in which then-Secretary Panetta says, I think it does suffice to say these operations have been very, responding to a question about drones, it does suffice to say that these operations have been effective because they have been very precise in terms of the targeting and involved a minimum of collateral damage. Doesn't that get over the burden of the plaintiffs here to show that there are documents involving the targeting, involving assessment of damage? Whether or not you have to give up those documents, whether or not you have to describe them anymore or anything else, isn't that a strong statement to indicate that the CIA director knows about an assessment of collateral damage, and since he's the CIA director, the logical inference of that is he read some document that said so.
I don't think it's sufficient, Your Honor, for a couple of reasons. One is where the court has confronted the question of how a Glomar applies in this context, it's been very specific that the public acknowledgement needs to be of particular documents. So the Moore case,
that's really
case,
seems to be really unclear. That is, in Wolf, we talked about the difference between official acknowledgement of the existence of a document and official acknowledgement of whether there are documents or not. So let's take this hypothetical. Not that hypothetical. It's the Glomar case. The CIA says, you know, as a matter of fact, we bought Howard Hughes's boat. We actually have a Glomar Explorer. We're using it every day. Plaintiffs, the ACLU, files a FOIA request for documents related to the Glomar Explorer. Can the CIA say we will not acknowledge the existence of documents at that point, having already acknowledged that they operate the boat?
Right. I think certainly in all of these cases there's a tiering of levels of detail.
Yes.
And so certainly here, you know, there are a number of specific requests. The case had been briefed up until, up until this court at the highest level of generality, whether any documents could be acknowledged. Right. Certainly, even consistent with the position that we've taken on the no number, no list in the New York case, many of the specific requests, that really has a bearing on the first request in this particular case.
Well, might,
a number of others might still be subject
to You might still give a Glomar response to the question, do we have any documents that reflect that we own the boat or we own the drones? But that's a different question than do we have any documents at all? And looking at Panetta's statement, it's sort of hard to imagine that there aren't any documents if he's making an assessment of collateral damage. But let me move to the next one. The next one is his statement after he's the Secretary of Defense. Now, this one is quite clear, right? That predators are something I was very familiar with in my last job. He said, having moved from the CIA to the Pentagon, obviously I have a hell of a lot more weapons available to me in this job than I had at the CIA, although the predators aren't bad. That pretty much sounds like an acknowledgement that he had a weapon available to him at the CIA called the Predator, correct?
I think it's an ambiguous aside that
well, this I was don't a statement him. To the troops. This wasn't some sort of aside. This was a statement he made to the troops.
I think in the context of what he was saying, it's an aside. And even to the extent it acknowledges that predators were available to him when he was Secretary of Defense, CIA director. That doesn't indicate whether they were CIA assets or whether they were available to him because they were being used by another agency. It also doesn't indicate whether they were being used for lethal force, which is the issue subject to this FOIA request, as opposed to surveillance.
First of all, it's a predator. It's not. We're not talking about a surveillance drone.
They have multiple purposes. Uh-huh. I think that's.
But he's talking about a weapon. Same sentence uses the word weapon.
And again, I think context of a DOD official, weapons refer to assets, including surveillance.
Does this not at least be an acknowledgement that he had information about these things when he was the CIA director?
I think it is an acknowledgement that he was familiar with.
In his former job.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So it wouldn't injure the national security then to acknowledge that there are documents about drones in the CIA, unless you think that Secretary Panetta has violated the national security by making this statement.
Again, Your Honor, I think as reflected in the New York case, we have acknowledged that the question about whether there are any documents is not where we are drawing the line.
That was where you were drawing the line before, notwithstanding Secretary Panetta's statement, which makes me wonder how a lower level information officer at the CIA can say it would damage the national security to acknowledge that we have documents about drones when the Secretary of Defense acknowledges information about drones in his job as the CIA, unless he should be punished in some way. You don't think that, I assume.
I mean, I think also there is the point about him being a former official of the agency.
He's former, but he is in a national security position.
Yes.
And his statements about, unless we are to say that he's uninterested in the national security, his disclosures have to be taken to suggest more than an information officer at the CIA that it wouldn't harm the national security. And apparently you've now acknowledged that because now you're acknowledging it.
I mean, that's consistent with the declaration that was filed in the Southern District case. I think the point here, though, is that where we're talking about ambiguous statements, and I think it's fair to say that all of these are somewhat ambiguous. Some people might read them one way. If they can be read the other way, so for example, if all of these statements, individually or collectively, can be read as consistent with, for example, the line that's been drawn in Mr. Brennan's speech, which is to acknowledge certain government activities but not the involvement of the CIA,
So let's turn to Mr. Brennan's speech, which actually is the most problematic at all. And he says, in the context of a discussion about drones, right? The United States is the first nation to regularly conduct strikes using remotely piloted aircraft in an armed conflict. He says, Let me say this as simply as I can. The United States conducts targeted strikes against the specific al-Qaeda terrorists, sometimes using a remotely piloted aircraft, often referred to publicly as drones. And then he says, when we do this, we are, of course, mindful of important checks. We review the most up-to-date intelligence, drawing on the full range of our intelligence capabilities. We may ask the intelligence community to go back and collect additional intelligence or refine the analysis. Suffice it to say, our intelligence community has multiple ways to determine with a high degree of confidence that the individual being targeted is indeed the al-Qaeda terrorist we are seeking. Now, doesn't that constitute an official acknowledgement that the CIA is, in quote, involved in the drone program, regardless of whether it owns the drones or DOD owns the drones or whether its operators run the drones or DOD's operators? It's involved in it because, unless it's a member of the intelligence community that has decided to recuse itself.
I think, Your Honor, it's again, not sufficient to constitute the kind of precise official confirmation that this court's test has required. As Your Honor points out, the intelligence community is a collection of agencies. It's 17 agencies, and I don't believe that this court has
the full range of our intelligence capabilities. Does the CIA not have any?
Again, Your Honor, it doesn't say who within the government.
No,
this
the Glomar is a judicial construct to begin with. As we point out, you are really asking us to say, if the CIA is the emperor, you're asking us to say the emperor has clothes, even when the emperor's bosses say that the emperor doesn't. I mean, how can you ask the court to say that at this point? It's one thing to say it in a circumstance where there's no official acknowledgement of any kind. It's another thing to say it when the president says we have a drone program, the former CIA director, now the DOD secretary, says the CIA had a program. I understand your point about concern that disclosure of specific documents could disclose things that would injure the national security, and that seems to be an argument for another day. But the argument that disclosure, that we have documents about about assessments of the consequence of drone programs, it just beggars belief that the CIA wouldn't care about that question.
I have a few answers to that, Your Honor, I think, including by pointing to some of this court's prior cases and other prior cases. In the Wilner case, for example, the Second Circuit
that's
case
not
involving,
our case.
That's not your case, the terror surveillance program, and the Afshar case, which is the D.C. Circuit's case. Both involved situations in which there was a general acknowledgement of some activity, some program, terrorist surveillance program, and in the Afshar case, the question was some connection to the Iranian intelligence service. And in both cases, the courts emphasized that discussion at a certain level of that the government is generally doing something, that there is something called the terrorist surveillance program, did not require the disclosure of operational details. So the Wilner case upheld the Glomar response, and in the Afshar case,
but
the court specifically...
Wasn't a Glomar response about particular communications with particular individuals? Wasn't that what it was about?
And about the activities in the collection process.
It was a request for specific kinds of information, it didn't uphold a statement that we have no TSP process or that we have no documents involving TSP at all, right?
Right. And again, we're not here asking Your Honor to conclude that there's been no acknowledgement of the use of drones by the government. There clearly has been. Submission in the Second Circuit, in the SDNY, suggested, the position the government is taking here has been evaluated at the highest levels of the executive branch. It reflects the considered national security judgment that there would be a harm to going beyond the general discussion of that has been reflected in the speeches into the particular involvement of this agency, one way or the other. And in the court's past cases, that has been respected. So in Afshar, for example, the question—
That's not in the affidavit here, right? The discussion you're making, which is how national security will be injured by indicating the CIA's involvement as compared to the government's, that is in the SDNY affidavit. I don't think it's in this affidavit.
I think the harm that would flow from acknowledging one way or the other whether the CIA is involved is reflected in the Cole affidavit, although not in as much detail as in later submissions. And so to the extent that that is an important question and the court finds the current summary judgment record insufficient, as the court has done in the past, we'd urge the opportunity to supplement on that point. But in Afshar, I think it's illustrative because—
Afshar's not a Glomar case, was it?
No, but the issue in the case was having reflected documents showing FBI involvement. Was the government nevertheless entitled to conceal whether or not the CIA was involved in a particular program?
I'm confused about your response to Judge Garland about the Cole affidavit. It says that the records they want would reveal the type of activities in which the CIA may be involved, and then it says the response would reveal whether or not the CIA specifically, whether or not the CIA was specifically involved in target selection, which would be a classified fact. The CIA has never acknowledged that. So
that is one of the— That is one of the requests in this request, and the Cole Declaration explains why answering whether or not documents exist would reveal that classified
information. I only ask you that because I thought you were responding to Judge Garland's focus questions by saying that the Cole affidavit didn't make such a representation.
No. If so, I'm sorry. What I intended to say was that there are discussions in the Cole affidavit about why acknowledging the involvement generally and then on particular pieces of the ACLU's request would harm national security.
The affidavit in this case says it, but doesn't give a reason. The affidavit in the Southern District gives a considerably detailed reason. I'm not saying whether it's a good reason or not, but it addresses the question in a way that this one doesn't.
That is certainly true. I think the other point I would make about the exercise here of examining the individual statements is that I go back to the reasons for the very strict test that the court has created, emphasizing that it's for the executive branch is better situated to make the judgments about whether or not reading pieces of information together would or wouldn't have consequences for the national security, and that there's a difference with respect to international affairs quite often between rumor, speculation, news stories that are putting disparate pieces of information together, and official confirmation, whether required by the court or otherwise, of government involvement or a particular agency's involvement in a particular activity. And the court in several cases has made clear that CIA's activities in particular present that problem in the area of international affairs. And so for those reasons,
reason, you're right, we've given leeway to the intelligence community because of the foreign affairs concerns. But the allegation here, right, is that there are no foreign affairs concerns. Those were thrown to one side, because the allegation here is there was a strategy of selective disclosure, not for any foreign policy gains, but for other concerns. So I'm not certain how your foreign policy argument works here. It's certainly been an important element of previous cases, but this doesn't seem to be a case that the government ought to get that benefit.
I think, Your Honor, that's incorrect, because
the alleged leaks here were done for foreign policy reasons?
And putting aside whether they're actually, there is evidence of the kind of coordinated campaign that you're talking about. The point is that official confirmation, clear statement by, on the record by the government of CIA involvement or not in particular activities can have foreign affairs consequences. So to the extent that there are concerns about the kind of allegations that you've mentioned, and I'm certainly not here to defend leaks as a general matter, putting aside the facts of this case. The FOIA litigation is not the mechanism for conducting that kind of leak inquiry. There are other mechanisms within the executive branch, through public discussion, through congressional oversight, for accountability on all of those.
Except when FOIA can be misused, right? FOIA can be misused to carry on a campaign of strategic leaks and hide behind FOIA. Yeah.
I respectfully submit that the plaintiff's speculation to that effect doesn't trigger that concern.
But that's the allegation here, and all I'm saying is it suggests perhaps some different values in play than in the cases where we've given wide sway to the government to engage in activity that didn't rise to the level of official acknowledgement.
I think that the inquiry in FOIA litigation is whether or not, based on the record, the disclosure of the information sought would or wouldn't harm national security. And to the extent that there are other concerns about activities in the government, there are other mechanisms to get at that. To go down that road would be new for this court, and as far as I know, for any court. It's not clear what the threshold would be for triggering that kind of inquiry, and it's inconsistent with the narrow role that the Supreme Court in the Sims case and this court in a number of cases has said should be the court's inquiry in FOIA cases, to look for an exact match, and if there isn't a match, then there's not official confirmation.
Speaking of new things, I have this question. It may not have any relevance right now. The no number, no list, which in reading through the Southern District materials, it says this is a common practice that the CIA uses. I've been here 15 years. I've heard a lot of FOIA cases. I was in the government before that. Participated in a lot of FOIA cases. I never heard that phrase before. I used Westlaw. I found three references, two to the Basumi case and one to a district court case. So what's the story here? Is this a new kind of response? Is it never made it into court? Where does this phrase, no number, no list, as a way of answering rather than Glomar, where did that come from?
Well, I'm certainly familiar with it from the Basumi case.
Yeah.
Is
that the only case it's ever, the CIA has ever made that argument for?
I don't know the answer to that, Your Honor. I do think that the logic of it flows directly from the logic behind Glomar, which itself, as has been indicated, is an interpretation of the exemptions. FOIA, the statute, makes clear, particularly then when read with other statutes on national security information, the question is whether disclosure of particular information would or wouldn't harm national security. So the Glomar and no number, no list, I think, are both expressions of the same question, which is if forced to provide particular information, whether it's any list at all or details of the number or nature or categories of documents or what have you, whatever level the disclosure would harm national security, the exemptions allow for it to be protected.
Rather than Glomar, it sounds more like a discussion of the Vaughan Index. Sometimes we allow vague Vaughan indexes. Sometimes we allow totally in-camera, in the court, examination of documents. Sometimes we require very specific and very public Vaughan indexes. And the nature of the Vaughan index depends on what is revealed, what could be revealed. If the purpose of the Vaughan index is to provide an opportunity to argue but not to reveal, and if a Vaughan index can't do anything but reveal, then a modified Vaughan index would apply. I'm not sure exactly why it's the same as, I appreciate that the Seventh Circuit thinks it's the same, but it seems to me there's a difference between asking the court to go along with the idea that we can't acknowledge whether there are documents at all, when it seems clear that there are, and now you're acknowledging that there are, and asking the court to go along with a modified Vaughan index, which doesn't harm the national security index after some findings by the district court in that regard.
Right. And the Southern District submission, I would suggest, is along that spectrum. The declarations there, both public and classified, explain why that is the level of detail at which it's appropriate to address these questions. I think the other point I would make in this regard is that in terms of the functions that flow from the statute, most of this discussion of harm comes in the Exemption 1 context. Exemption 3 is a more categorical statement by Congress when you combine Exemption 3 with the other statutes, that there are sets of information, categories of documents, including documents related to the CIA functions and to intelligence sources and methods that are categorically presumed to be outside the scope of what should be disclosed and therefore exempted from FOIA. And, you know, I don't think that these statements and some of the questions about whether it would or wouldn't harm national security to go a step further address Exemption 3, which, as was noted earlier, the plaintiffs have now conceded, or at least are not pressing on appeal, that the information that we're talking about falls within those appropriate categories.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Jaffer, I think we can officially acknowledge that you used up all your time. But you can take 4 minutes. Go ahead.
Judge Garland, I think I avoided one of your questions, which I now want to address.
Well, let people do that. But you slipped away. You're a very good
litigator. You asked me about waiver of the harm argument, and I think it's fair to say we have waived that argument. As to the question about litigation strategy,
which harm argument have you waived?
So to the extent the question is whether the disclosure of the things that Secretary Panetta and the President have now disclosed would otherwise have been protected under Exemptions 1 and 3, I don't think it's open to us to argue now that the exemptions are improperly invoked. Now, that said, I don't think that the CIA...
I'm not sure exactly what that means. Can you put that in very specific context here?
Sure. Well, so the government here has... I actually don't think this is material at all because of what government counsel just said, which is Exemption 3 doesn't require a showing of harm on the part of the government. And because it doesn't require a showing of harm, you know, the question of harm relates only to Exemption 1. We need to win... We need to prevail on both Exemption 1 and Exemption 3 to prevail overall. So I don't think it's material, but to the extent it's material, I think it's fair to say that we have waived the argument that these statements that Secretary Panetta and the President have made would not have been protectable under Exemptions 1 and 3 but for these disclosures. So... You know, I don't know if that clarifies, but
I'm unclear is you obviously have a different idea of what the statements were than the government has.
So. That's right. That's right. So
to put it in the context I was asking you before, the idea that disclosure of the CIA's involvement as compared to the United States involvement overall, whether once disclosure of the government's involvement, there would be no harm from the CIA's involvement. If that hasn't been conceded that the CIA actually operates them, you can't make the argument.
I don't think it's been asserted by the CIA. I don't think that claim has been made with any specificity at all in their declaration.
Well, then you're not waiving that one.
No, there's nothing to waive because they haven't made that right.
What harm argument? I'm sorry to press on this, but I would.
Right. To the extent they made harm arguments, you know, I don't think it's open to us to oppose those harm arguments now. But they haven't made that harm argument. The CIA's declaration, you know, and does include one sentence that seems to be referring specifically to the CIA's role in selecting targets. That's the only sentence, I think, in the declaration that goes to this point, if it goes to the point at all. And I think that, at best, that's conclusory. The question of the Vaughan Declaration, I know that the court is already aware of this, but the district courts deal with this kind of issue all the time. The fact, you know, if we were to prevail on this Glomar or no number, no list argument, it doesn't mean, obviously, that the CIA now turns over all of its documents to us. There is this There is this phase in which the government must explain on the record why it's withholding documents from the public if it wants to continue withholding them. And at that phase, the district court has a lot of leeway to ensure that information that's legitimately secret remains legitimately secret.
Does the district court also have a lot of leeway in deciding what goes into the Vaughan, what degree of detail goes into the Vaughan index?
Absolutely, Your Honor. But in justifying the use of generalities in the Vaughan, the government can't point, or shouldn't be able to point, if we get remanded now, shouldn't be able to point to its interest in maintaining the confidentiality of the CIA's drone program. That is something that's been disclosed, and to the extent the government wants to justify the use of generalities in the Vaughan, it must point to something other than that.
You use the phrase, the CIA's drone program. Are you using it in the context that you suggested in your reply?
As a shorthand.
Just meaning that the CIA has documents relating to drones,
or that's right, Your Honor.
That the CIA owns.
In the larger sense, I mean it in the larger sense. Documents that the CIA has in its possession. Although again, we feel that the CIA has actually disclosed its the fact that the CIA specifically uses drones to carry out targeted killings.
I think I read your response to some of the other statements as really focused on the CIA. Like with respect to one of the statements, I don't remember which one it was, you made the point that certain articles had revealed that the DOD does not have a drone program, which led you to conclude that it must be the CIA that did, correct?
That's right, Your Honor.
Yeah, so you are really focusing on the CIA's drone program.
No, Your Honor. It's just that we think it's clear now. I mean, there's obviously no dispute about it anymore that the government has acknowledged an interest that there is a drone program run by the U.S. government. And so the hard question, to the extent there's a hard question left, it's this question of whether the CIA's role has been disclosed. And so we were just trying to make clear that it's not just that the government has disclosed that there is a drone program, but that the CIA is actually using drones to carry out targeted killings. Your Honor,
do you have anything else you want to?
The only thing I want to add is that the Glomar Doctrine is a judicially created construct. There's nothing that
we all know. We know that.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes. Yep. Thank you. The court will take a brief recess before the next case.